3, 2, 1. And we're rolling.
All right. For all the folks here at Halcyon and Mueller, we are Critics on Tap. So we are a weekly podcast series where we go and see a new movie, and then we come over here, we drink before, during, and after the movie, usually, and we discuss it in a fun, lighthearted, alcoholic-induced kind of manner, because that's the way movies should be reviewed, the way that we see them, with friends, having drinks, having fun. It's 2019. So that's what we're doing. For those in the room who want to listen along, great. It should be a fun time. If you have any comments, you've seen the movie, or just want to talk about things, feel free to like just interject. Who cares? It's fun. We'll just go where it goes. So those of us... let's see. Oh, we're doing Good Boys. So Good Boys is a R-rated comedy starring tweens, three 12-year-old boys, and their kind of journey one day kind of coming into young adulthood and kind of its own sort of coming-of-age story.
It's Goonies so, up today.
I don't want to go too deep diving into it, but I just want to let you know what it is we're doing. So that's what we're doing. First off, I'm going to introduce myself. My name is Bo Harris. I'm a film producer and multi-hyphenate of other things in the artistic industries and whatnot around Austin. Joined here with Matthias Marisigan again, running sound. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Matthias. I'm an actor, and that's it.
Hi, my name is Spencer. I'm a writer of films and other things.
Hi, my name is Kiko, and I'm just here.
Yeah, on your phone, too, which is always great. I love that.
Kiko people just asked me what the name of the movie was.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
Yeah, so I think
was Jacob Tremblay Oscar nominated?
For A Room?
Yeah.
I believe so. Did he? I don't know if he
was. This Oscar nominated Jacob Tremblay? And
I believe
Good
so,
Boys?
Yeah. Yeah, I believe he was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for A Room, but he did not win. I think the award for youngest Oscar still goes to Anna Paquin for The Piano, yeah. If anyone remembers that. Before we deep dive too much into that, I wanted to do kind of a shout-out thing where at the beginning here we give some sort of shout out to something we're watching or something we saw recently or something that just really stands out. So I'll set the example by going first. For me, this afternoon, I watched The Righteous Gemstones premiered last night on HBO. Danny McBride created, wrote, directed the first episode, stars in it alongside John Goodman, Adam Devine, and several others. A lot of vice principal regulars you're seeing on there. And it is absurdly funny. I didn't think it was an hour. I turned it on expecting it to be 1 hour. So then I was, or to be a half hour, like vice principals ended up being 1 hour, but it's totally worth it. I'm totally hooked. Want to watch more. Then on the way here, I was listening to his Danny McBride's interview podcast on Armchair Expert, Dax Shepard. And the way he just describes it, I don't know. It hits all the right notes for me, and I love it. So if I don't know why you'd be on the fence about it or if you hadn't heard of it for whatever reason, but Righteous Gemstones on HBO, check it out. Matthias, you got a shout out?
Yeah, I spent the past 2 days watching Mindhunter season 2. Ooh. Have any of y'all seen Mindhunter, the first season?
Yeah.
I watched a video essay about Mindhunter, but didn't watch Mindhunter.
Well, let me tell you what Mindhunter is.
I hunted the
Mindhunter. It's probably one of the best shows on Netflix.
Really?
Yeah, it's David Fincher created, David directed Fincher. This stuff.
Yeah, so. And for this season, he shot the first 3 episodes, and they're so, you know, David Fincher, so they're so tightly wound, you know, and like precisionally made, you know, and there's just something about this show is it's just so good. I can't say much about it, but this season I think it continues after the first season very well, and it makes you fall in love with it all over again and makes you very disturbed at the same time. So yeah.
Sweet.
Is it a show that you have to watch season 1 to watch season 2, or
yes,
can people jump
you
in?
You need to watch season 1.
That's why I thought it was like a good detective type thing where you don't need to see season, but you do need to?
Yeah, it's not Black Mirror where you can just come in. You have to watch from the beginning. Yeah.
I was just curious.
Yeah. You got to know. You got to watch it from the beginning.
Okay. You want to go?
I'm watching The Golden Girls. I don't know if y'all have seen that, you know. I'm a Blanche
what
guy.
What is that?
No, I'm just kidding. I'm not really watching much whatever happens to me on there.
You know,
Golden Girls is amazing. One of the other ones I got into was Queen of the South, which is actually filmed in Dallas. I really like it. It's just really interesting. And I'm into this huge drug lord thing, I guess, since everything's being legalized. You know, it's going to be awesome, but that's what I like.
Fun fact, I auditioned for Queen of the South not long ago. Matias taped the audition for me.
Nice.
Yeah, here, off mic afterwards, remind me, and we'll discuss which role I auditioned for, because I want to find it and see who they did cast.
That
and
was if just they did better, I was going to
And
ask,
if they did a better job, than I think I would have done.
You were auditioning little, for.
Yeah, yeah, it was like for like something in a...
He was auditioning to play the drugs. Yeah. I have an anti-shout-out. Last night, we tried watching the new TV show, What We Do in the Shadows, based on the movie What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah.
And it was not good.
What?
Not good at all. Hmm. We watched three episodes, and you know what it is I think there's some magic about Taika Waititi and Jemaine Clement specifically being in that movie that's so magical, and then their writing and the voices of other actors feels lesser than that. Like, you want them to be, like, it's funny. The writing's there. You can see the structure happening really, like, in a really great way, setting up things. But there's something magical about that 2-hour original movie capturing the tone of that show. And then the show kind of dragging out in a weird, long way with actors who are not the same original creators that just turned me off. I also, like, to be straightforward, am a big Flight of the Conchords fan. So I just really wanted Jemaine Clement to be in it. And there's an actor in the show who they do the makeup to make him look just like Jemaine Clement, but it's not him. And I got really disappointed. So anti-shout out to the show. Try it out, I guess. But also just watch the movie and be content with the movie, because it was fine. It was good. It was funny as fuck and fine and awesome. The show's all right.
Wait, is it Clement or is it Clement?
Jemaine Clement.
You said Clement.
I think either pronunciation is correct.
No, I don't. No, this is important.
Are you a New Zealand racist?
It really doesn't matter.
Clemente is the drink used for Bloody Marys.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, I don't know. I've heard multiple people say they like the series What We Do in the Shadow, but I haven't watched it, so
that's
can't
fine
speak
too.
To it.
I mean, like I said, it's all perspective.
Yeah. So, What We Do in the Shadows TV series, not for everybody. We can do a non-spoilery kind of recap of the movie. Does anybody feel strongly about starting that out for us?
Rock, paper, scissors?
No?
Okay. Not me.
So,
listen, if you actually did this in sixth grade, none of the rewards or benefits these children somehow got is actually going to happen.
I wonder if they tried to break the F-bomb record
for
in
real
movies.
We've come a long way since Stand By Me. That's how I felt.
Yeah,
for movies about 12-year-olds and the way they talk
doing
to each
things
other.
Like smoking cigarettes and being like
100%. Yeah, very. This is a very 2019. Everything is fine now. We play Red Band trailers. Generation.
However, I feel like they would have gotten caught right away. Like. Skipping school kind of things, because
I'll give a quick like dissertation. So this is about 12-year-olds who want anything else in the world, like any other 12-year-old boys want, which is to kiss a girl, which obviously is the Mount Rushmore of anything you can do at 12 years old. There's nothing. And once you've done that, flunk all your grades, you're good.
Yeah. Well, to be clear, this is so it takes place 2 weeks into their sixth grade
year. They just started.
And only one of them really wants to kiss a girl, and the other two.
It's all that pent-up summertime. Yeah. All that pent-up summertime hormonal.
But that's that age where you're kind of unsure, like what. You know, like what attraction is, what you're feeling, your own body just kind of raging with hormones.
Right.
And the film did a good job of like really tapping into that.
And I guess without spoiling, because what it does also really great is it's not just a this happens and this happens and this happens movie, which I feel like a lot of comedies in that genre unfortunately fall into that plot structure category. When they make a choice to do something in order to obtain their goal, a consequence happens. And because of that consequence, then something else happens, but then something else. So there's a really great, straight from South Park, strong sense of writing based on behavior that happens in that movie. But also, I feel like that joke happens for an hour longer than it's supposed to go. Like after 30 minutes, the same structure keeps happening and there's not like a big overall change. So they'll do anything they want to get to this. There's this big party. They're trying to get to this kissing
this
party. All the parties, all these parties I was never invited to, or I feel like unless maybe I'm alone
so
in this.
Rich.
Yeah. None of us were invited to those parties. That's
okay.
Why we're
good. I feel safe now. and so the choices they make, they'll hell or high water. They're going to get to this party. And because of that, shenanigans ensue, obviously involving drugs, a dislocated arm.
talking to a cop.
Sex toys.
Sex toys. Sex.
There were a lot of sex toys. There was movie.
I feel like the sex toys needed
dildo,
to get like
ball gag.
They needed to get credit. Like they should have been in the credits, acted by like the brand of those sex toys. There was enough screen time where that was warranted. There was a lot of
sex
toys.
Yeah, I feel like the production designer had a lot of fun.
Should have been sponsored by Amazon.
Support your local sex store.
Sitting, laying out like 38
No shame in your game. There's one on South Lamar. Where's anybody else? There's anyone one on Frontage Road.
There's
I think people know how to use
I've
Google.
Never been into these
we
places.
Can give them
I've
as
drove
a sponsor.
By them.
I mean, like, sex stuff.
Yeah. Please give us your money, candies on South Lamar.
Anal beads.
So, can you imagine being the production designer on this movie and walking into the director and just being like, here's 38 different dildos. Which one do you like? We'll return the other 37 unopened.
I like
unopened.
The one with the pink one.
If you can return unopened dildos, I'm hoping. I don't know how that
if
works.
Film school has taught me anything, they had a director's Bible that they brought in to make sure that it sucked to the through line of the color palette chosen by the director.
Yeah, one of the
that represents
if they storyboarded
the characters,
out the, sex
the characters' and, deep metaphor. Clearly, that's where they were going.
Yeah, that was probably an interesting lookbook they probably used to show the production designer what they wanted. So, while we're on that, the directors. So it's written by two guys who came from The Office, Lee Iceberg and Gene Studnipsky, and directed by Gene. And then, so these guys have done Bad Teacher. They've written Bad Teacher in Year One.
Yeah.
And then only ever written and
classics.
Directed a couple episodes of The Office. So this is their first time directing. I don't know how much the other guy had involvement necessarily, but they very much were, it felt like they were guided by the producing help of Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, right? And it very much felt like a weirdly, like almost a spiritual prequel to Superbad.
It seemed like Superbad
in
middle school years.
Three friends trying to get to a party, and it all takes place.
This is
the cop and the
Superbad extended universe.
Yes. Yeah.
This all stems. The house. We'll get to this later. There's a house in the movie that looks straight out of Neighbors. Probably filmed in the same place, the literal same house. And
there's a part where they get the alcohol and it's straight out of Superbad.
But I think we can all agree that it was a movie that, like, and we were in a pretty packed house, even for being a Monday night over at the Alamo Draft House. Alamo Draft House Village.
Not one 12-year-old.
And because they weren't showing it at Mueller, which is next door to us here at Halcyon, unfortunately. So we had to travel over to that one. But it was a packed house and it was a lot of audible laughs. Pretty nonstop throughout the movie, it felt like, right? So, I mean, it's something that it seemed like anybody with an even slightly raunchy sense of humor of any kind is going to get a lot of enjoyment out of this movie, right?
You need a raunchy sense of humor to see this.
So, Matthias, any, like, general thoughts that, I mean, you said you don't know how to describe, but, would you recommend it? And who would you recommend it to?
What's your Twitter answer? What's your Twitter review?
I would only recommend this movie to parents.
Really?
Every single parent I know, I'm sending them to this movie because I think it's I just want to scare the hell out of them. This is like this is like a horror film for parents. And I think it's freaking amazing. I don't know. I laughed my ass off and I think it was really funny, but I don't know. I don't know how to talk about this movie.
Would we all agree that, like, and this is weird, the age group that it revolves around, this age group, is not an age group that should be watching it?
No.
Yeah,
I don't think half the stuff that they knew these kids were referencing, I don't think they even know half the stuff that they were referencing. They just were written in a script, and they kind of maybe know about it, which is exactly how the characters were written, too. You know? Like, I'm very curious at how the adult version of making this movie...
Jacob Tremblay is James Franco... The spiky-haired kid is Seth Rogen, who's a third kid. If this is the adult, like adults
Take
are playing
Craig, Craig Robinson.
Like, when they're writing this and they're voicing the characters, what of the Seth Rogen extended universe actors are voicing these characters?
I don't know.
Craig
Robinson was the third one. If Seth Rogen is the...
Danny McBride would have been the spiky-haired
kid. Oh, that
would have
been great, yeah.
Very similar, like him and that. What's that baseball show? What's that baseball show?
I don't know. I think Danny McBride was the what was his name? Saren, the rich kid who hosts the house party.
Yeah,
like the slick back hair, looking straight at a West Side Story,
cocky, kind of bullyish. Almost,
okay, I could see that.
That's more of a Danny McBride.
Yes,
but
I guess
either way,
I think if I was a parent, and it's not the same effect as watching eighth grade. Like if I was a parent, in a weird way, I would rather take my child to eighth grade than this movie.
Wow.
No, everyone was freaked
because
out
because I feel like that's a movie where if you're a parent genuinely trying to relate to your children and understand them and like let them watch a serious movie, you take them to that. This is a movie that, like you said, like this is a horror movie for a parent. You do not want your children to do any of the things that are done in this movie. This is a freaking nightmare.
I love Eighth Grade. I think that was one of the most underrated movies of the year before last or last year.
That's all I could think of when I was watching the movie.
Oh wow, yeah. Because I mean, it's obviously a very different tone and style and approach, but it is that
they're polar opposites from the same coin, but the other sides of the same coin.
Opposite sides of the same coin, which is kind of like ripping off that Band-Aid that is that kind of raw,
the same awkwardness, the same cringiness, but from a totally different tonal perspective.
I was gonna say, did anyone else kind of feel like it was almost? I'm trying to think. Stand By Me, you said, is a really good reference. Like if Stand By Me was, you know,
how far
was,
we've come.
Was made with Superbad, you know, kind of thing.
Oh
I think
my
also,
God.
But I think also a lot of it for me, I really thought of Freaks and Geeks. Because if you're familiar with Freaks and Geeks, you have like the younger brother generation, you know, and then you have the Linda Cardellini and James Franco and Seth Rogen group. And they were like the two older girls who are like arguably the fourth and fifth leads of this movie. And you had that like right around that same age difference in time period in your young adult life. And so I think Freaks and Geeks is another one that seemed like a huge influence on this one. I don't know, Sheldon.
I've never seen it. That's a generation above me. But I see where you're coming from too, though, where like, obviously, people when you're in high school, you get 12-year-olds to buy drugs for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And the general like thing of this whole thing was just being awkward, but not knowing that you're awkward going through that. So I think it was just kind of crazy, like letting them be who they were, be kids. And then yet it was just still really fucking awkward. That's what I always find. I was like, yeah, I know that.
This movie zipped really fast. Yeah. This won't be a spoiler, but like the first 15 minutes, this movie, boom, 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 boom,
they
boom.
Hit everything,
so
the
much happening really, really quickly. Just to set the tone, and then kept going at that pace for 90 minutes. Did anybody feel that was like really fast? Like they just skipped over stuff?
I mean, I say there's just diving into spoiler stuff, because I think we all kind of have
like
the same thing of like,
with
it's...
kids.
Yeah, that's the way I thought of gravity.
Gravity, there that's what go. I thought. It was just intense the whole time.
Clearly, they took the point-by-point Bible of the gravity script and decided, this is how we're going to make this movie. So yeah, get in this spoiler talk. So we start out the movie, just kind of take it point by point as we think about it, I think is probably the way to go. And we open the movie with Jacob Tremblay's character kind of exploring
video game creation.
It's on a video game character like we all do, obviously.
Yeah, let's not tiptoe around it. Yeah, just putting boobs on a cartoon video game character and maybe going to masturbate. And we see Will Forte.
And he ties up the door the wrong way because the door opens inside and not outside. So he's thinking, he's like, I'm going to keep my dad from walking in here by tying up the doorknob. But then the door opens inwards.
Also, who owns a $1,500 MacBook Pro when you're 12 years old?
That was the moment generationally
where I was like, I had a phone with four phone numbers on it at 12 years old.
Yeah, this
have
generation
a
though, yeah,
Pro.
In the suburbs, I think it's everyone has it. It's a school requirement.
You got
at
LA
point.
Money, you got Will Forte money.
Mm. Yeah, Will Forte being like the new dad that's like, I'm down with this. I know what I went through. And
he was so proud of his boy.
Proud of his boy for coming into this moment, because if it was a
for
daughter,
coming
you
into
know,
this
he would have not had.
Do you guys remember this? Do you guys remember the sex talk? Like, is there a specific moment? Like,
never
movies betray the sex talk.
What
like, there's like an iconic
talk?
Moment, but I don't remember it like an iconic moment. Like, I never had that.
I didn't have any kind of sex talk with parents.
I don't remember like the parent being like, "I'm so proud." Like,
I gleaned
all
the knowledge.
Goodbye.
All the knowledge of sex and everything else I gleaned through movies and TV shows and everything else. Like, and maybe some conversations with some friends. But, like, it was a lot of people who didn't know what they were talking about, like, peacocking, like, they knew what they were talking about.
Like, you don't
friends.
Know what it's like, of course
I think
on the
that,
mouth.
Which, obviously, we see in this movie a lot, too. They did
I was,
really
like, a preteen and, like, early YouTube. So, like, for me, just a whole, like, just weird, I don't know.
Wait,
I, don't know.
I graduated when YouTube was invented. What are you talking about?
Yeah. What? I'm older than Google.
Yeah.
No, I had two sex talks, one from my mom and one from my dad.
Separate sex talks. What was the difference?
Definitely different is my dad saying, by the way, when you get a girl, you just kind of bang the shit out of her. That was the extent of my dad. Now, my mom, on the other hand.
Shout out to Kiko's dad.
I know, right? My mom, on the other hand, I realize now was after like a bad date night. Because she was just like, look, mijo, when you meet a girl and you get with her, you just don't want to get your rocks off by yourself.
What?
You want it? I'm 12. I'm 12, mind you. So the
Kiko's
age of this
parents
movie,
are trying their stand up on 12 year old Kiko.
Yeah, they're legit.
Like, Kiko's parents are trying their sex stand up.
You've
got
to be able to
Kiko.
Go off of it. You've got to make sure she gets hers first because you can always get yours. Now, as a result of that, this is going to sound awfully weird, but my mom's been in my head every fucking time, which makes one night stands really hard.
Every time you've ever had sex?
First time, at least.
My friend Freud wants to talk to you.
I know, he really does. It's like,
I have two moms, so they just handed me a book and said, I don't know.
Jeez.
Here it is.
Was it a pop-up book? Did it have, like, coloring pages?
No.
No, okay.
Does anyone else have a more awkward sex talk? You have a more awkward sex talk? No. Yeah. Oh, more awkward.
Do you
want to
share? You can grab Kiko's mic. Give us a little outsider.
It's your time to shine.
Yeah. Introduce yourself if you want. You don't have to use your name. And just tell us your version.
Hi, I am Kiko's friend.
Hello, Kiko's friend. And
hi. So my sex talk was my mom gave me a library card and sent me to the sex ed area of the library and said, here you go. Why don't you learn everything you can from not me?
Sending you to the sex head section of the library sounds easy.
Was there like an old librarian who like you gave the little Rolodex card to and she like shuffles to the book section like the character from Monsters, Inc. to find the book? Slowly comes back. We don't have that book.
Yeah, like the Dewey Decimal System way to find.
Yeah, yeah. Dewey Decimal System. That's what I'm talking.
She's like, where is the clitoris that we've been trying to find it to?
What age are you here?
Did you real? Is that for real?
Yeah, this is legit.
Oh my God.
This actually happened. I was like probably 11, around like 10 or 11. 10. And
so this is like a 10-year-old's like doesn't know where to find this section is going. And can you help me find this section? No, that's so that you're right. That one wins.
That's much better than all of ours.
Yeah.
So both wholesome and raunchier somehow. Oh.
They were all from like the 70s too, so everything was excessively hairy inside the books.
Sepia tone photos, like half the page.
Curly, a little bit too.
There's
much
more pages on pube trimming than actual
Did that turn you off of sex, or did you? What did? How?
No, it kind of sets you up for disappointment later on. Reality comes knocking at your door, and you're like, "Oh, this did not look like what it looked."
That's
like
not what the picture.
That was the follow-up question I was gonna have. I feel like.
I feel this on a personal level. Just to
when was the first time? Do you remember the first kiss moment? Was it at that time period for y'all? At 12?
Oh, yeah.
Was it really? I'm a late bloomer child. Mm. Yeah.
You're a late bloomer child?
100%. I'm just more curious for like what real
like
people
in,
do.
Like second grade.
Second grade?
Yeah. I liked girls for a long
Kiko
time.
Didn't need the talk. He knew already at 8 years old.
I mean, I liked girls so much that I always felt like I had to come out straight to my family. Because like it was at the time when they were like boys were like, ooh, girls, and I was like, what's up?
Kiko's 9 years old. Mom, dad, I'm pregnant. I just now learned you were straight. I didn't know. I just assumed you were gay this whole time. All right.
Understandable. Understandable.
I'm glad we had to come out to Bo moments here on the podcast. That was nice. or to come out
actually. Really groundbreaking pod.
Thank you very much for sharing that story.
Yeah. All sorts of bears.
Yeah. I think, I was... I had a few almost kiss moments at that age, and then it never happened. And then I was always like weirdly like I expect this to be something bigger, and I want it to be somebody I care about so much. It's supposed to be spectacular. And then that just didn't happen in my like early high school days. So I was actually
beat the movie then.
I want to say
like
I was
very similar.
I want to say my first actual kiss was at age 17 with a girl that I ended up having sex with a week later. So
nice,
there was
not
a really quick progression.
Yeah, close the
he started
deal.
Hard in the paint, like from
I
the get-go.
I bet it was a quick progression.
High
five to that.
Yeah, it was.
I had several
it
years
was,
between that.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
I
was
gave rough. A girl in my, I wrote a letter to this girl in art class, and I spent 3 days writing this letter, and then I left it at her table, and I never saw her again. I never talked to her ever.
Did you put the box that says check yes or no if you like me?
No, dude. It was like a 4-page dissertation. It was more like a legally binding like contract
if,
of my pride than it was
moment,
like a yes or
me?
No. I didn't know that was an option. If I had done that, would have sealed the deal. Actually, no, that's not true. The epilogue of that is there's like a school dance, middle school dances. Shout out. Mm. Anyone else?
Bonus
where at
dancing.
The end of it, I didn't see her at all this dance until the last 5 minutes. I spent the first 45 minutes of the dance talking to everybody how I was trying to talk to this girl. And then I did at the end, we sat next to each other, and that was it.
So just like the movie, you were just
shout
like
out to
your friends.
Shout out to Rachel Johnson in Ridgefield, Washington, who is about to get married.
I will say, since we're in like spoiler territory.
Yeah.
Well, first off, I think it's interesting how now it's just about us talking about our sex lives at 12 years old.
That's the plot of that's the movie. That's the thing. If the movie is the same beat for 90 minutes, what else is there to talk about?
So I will say at the end of the movie, Jacob Tremblay's character goes through like three girls in like 4 weeks.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, they went through him.
Hold on.
They all jumped him.
Are you
so
telling
like
me
that
the montage at the end wasn't the best moment in the movie?
That was the... I related most to Jacob Tremblay at that time because I don't want to talk about my promiscuity at 12 years old and it wasn't that raunchy, but I was calling a different girl every week.
Like, and you're like... Hey,
new girl
babe.
Every week.
Like, hey, babe. Like, the way he was like really...
It was not at all. I didn't even know what... I didn't even know. I just liked girls, but it had nothing to do with, like, we're going out or anything. It was just me talking to them. That was it. I was like, I guess I'm talking to you now.
Yeah. More like plot happened in that two-minute montage than the whole movie. More things happened. And they make a joke about it at the end. Since we're in that spoiler territory, at the end, they decide to... They need to go separate ways as friends in order to grow, which is that's the producer being like, we need to throw something in there.
Well, that's
like,
very much Superbad too, where like the escalator where you see Michael Cera and Jonah Hill go off with like their different ways.
It was that moment, but with the children. Yeah. And then there's this montage that happens where they all progress into the clear direction we know they're going to go. And then they meet at this party and they're like, wow, it was a whole month since we last saw each other. I'm like, you did all that shit in a month? Yeah. You like went through life-changing stuff in a month?
That's the joke.
But in this movie,
that's the joke.
Takes place. Yeah. That was perfect. Great. No, I'm saying I love that sequence. It was so funny. And they're playing, because one of the characters wants to be in the musical, and it's Rock of Ages, which, have you guys seen that movie? The Rock of Ages movie?
I didn't see
Tom Cruise. He plays the Tom Cruise character.
Stacey Jacks is the character.
That's the character. Yeah. And the song, I Want to Know What Love is playing... And they get it's pretty much the runtime of that song that they go through all of sixth grade.
Yeah.
I just want to hear about y'all's experiences with this movie versus your own life.
So I was saying earlier, like for me, I gleaned everything I knew, or at least what I thought I knew about sex and kissing and all of that stuff from like movies and TV. And I could even reference this by saying, I clearly remember having my first sex dream at the age of 5.
No one wants to hear about this.
And this was because
Bo was
it was
ready to rock and roll.
Yeah. And like, but I didn't know what sex was, but I thought it was just rolling around naked, kissing, you know, in like a montage form inside of a time machine. Mostly
my life's
going to
be a montage.
Mostly because of a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. I forget which one exactly.
Bloodsport? Was it Bloodsport?
Does he do the splits in it?
Well,
it's not a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie.
While y'all were struggling to make jokes over my story, I had said time machine numerous times. So if you would shut the fuck up and listen, you would hear what I was saying.
Were there ninjas in it? Were there ninjas?
And there was... it was a 5-year-old me in a daycare center after school that my mom taught at. And there was this girl that I had a crush on named, I want to say Chelsea. And I had a dream that me and her were like naked kissing in like really what looked like a playground time machine, because I thought that's where you had sex when I was 5. And so I mean, that's kind of weird that like the point of it is that what we see in film and TV throughout our childhood can definitely like kind of influence what we think sex is or what it's supposed to be. And I think that's kind of an interesting takeaway. And they do kind of address that in this film with them trying to like Google, and they're like, let's look up kissing. No, let's look up porn. And
well, that's what I'm saying with like the YouTube generation. Like,
yeah,
like
it's very different now.
The generation after all of us, like they don't know a world before that. Like it just seems very like, oh, that's what we'll do. We'll go on the internet. Whereas like the way that movie's described, like children or like teenagers don't know how to have sex. So they just like get into weird scenarios to figure it out. But they do. There's so many references to like, there's like this sex doll that one of the kids' parents owns and they think it's a CPR doll.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what gets me about it. So
it's a reoccurring character.
Yeah, that kid's parents are obviously very sexually open. They really didn't apparently hide any of this shit.
What a weird, like, behind-the-scenes through line for this one child's parents to be, like, crazy sex
fiends. Yeah, but then he still didn't know
anything. And then we never see them.
I thought for sure, I thought for sure that he would have known everything because they would have talked to him.
Yeah, I really thought, like, out of nowhere, we're finally going to see his parents towards the end. It's going to be, like, Jeff Goldblum and, like, Leslie Mann or something, like, playing these parents.
It's just Russell Brand.
Yeah, just hyper-sexualized
His dad comes in a robe.
Hey, yeah. Russell Brand would be good because he's also a singer, so that would make sense that he had the kid who is, genetically a singer. Yeah, yeah.
Jeff Goldblum was a jazz musician.
Yeah, it kind of looked like a jazz musician's kind of sex toy collection.
He'll find a way.
What was y'all's favorite scene? Like, not like this is the best representation of what this movie's trying to say. What was your most enjoyable moment?
The frat house scene.
The frat house scene?
For sure. Because when it turned into this, like, we're going to stick him up and shoot out with a paintball gun.
So what gets us to this moment is that the children have a drone. One of the kids has a drone. And he's trying to figure, they're trying to figure out how to kiss. So obviously I'm just going to fly a drone into this girl's house, backyard, and I'm going to watch them kiss. And the girls steal the drone and they have it as leverage. And then the kids steal their drugs. And then they lose the drugs. And so now the girls are making them go get drugs for them to trade back for the drone. Yes. The kid's drone, because his dad needs it back. So they go into this frat
house.
From a frat
guy who wants to sell to them.
So they go to the frat house
into the neighbor's house. Yes. Yeah. It is the same house, 100%.
I really wonder if they even tried to get... Like
I thought it was gonna
to
be. I
cameos.
Thought it was gonna be. Yeah.
Like you think walking up because it's such a slow walk up, almost like horror film slow build up to this frat house. That you think like, oh, it's gonna be Dave Franco and Chris Riemann's Plath,
Zac
because they're all part of that same Seth Rogen universe. But it wasn't. It was just a bunch of people who I've never recognized.
But then they go in the house and one kid has brought a paintball gun.
Yeah.
So that was your favorite scene?
But that was my favorite scene because it took it to like the level of like this is a different film now. Like it was putting kids in a different genre. You know what I'm saying? Which I thought was great. And I think whenever they did that, especially at the end when we talked about the montage and them like coming in, like it was like it was very cliched like bro movie, like kind of, you know, we're going our separate ways, we had to learn, you know. And
I was
so
half expecting to play X Gon Give It to You.
Yeah.
In the background. It's whatever song they
pick.
So
it was a cliche action movie scene with a 12-year-old kid shooting a paintball gun.
But while it was cliche, I mean, it was shot really well. It reminded me more than...
It was the best filmmaking scene.
I think that's a great...
It reminded me more than anything of the Community paintball episodes made by the Russo brothers, who went on to be the MCU darlings who did Avengers Endgame and all that. Yeah, I mean, like, the action sequences they did in Community, these, like, really standard episodes that people know, it was similar to that, where, like, you have this, like, comedy through line, and then the action is, like, heightened somehow in a beautifully cinematic way, so that, you know, while still being funny, but also having, like, the true adrenaline. So that was really fascinating. I think that's why it was so good.
Yeah.
When you can hit
that was my favorite scene.
Marks.
Anyone else?
I thought the freeway scene was good. It was the most reactionary scene. Like Kiko talked about cringing. Like so they're trying to get to the mall.
I was cringing.
They're trying to get to the mall to get the drone because they've lost the drone.
You can see,
I'm gonna go buy a new drone.
Yeah.
And so they're gonna go buy a new drone because you know they have money.
And this is the first moment they see the finish line. Their whole journey as characters, they're seeing, or at least what they think.
They're on
is
the
their
hill.
Finish
they're
line.
Gonna get to the mall. All is well, and then they crescent over the hill, and there's
one
the
last
freeway,
big
and it's slow,
obstacle.
And mostly because it was just the most ridiculous scene.
Well, that's
like
also
there's
like,
no way any freeway, let alone the 405 in LA, goes from standstill traffic to 70 miles per hour cars. There's no way.
No.
Not in a million years.
Well, except they did this really good job of like really they toyed with the audience expectation of like you don't know what's going to happen to these kids. And so you really I was like they're not gonna,
they're gonna kill
they're not going to run over a kid.
It's all
consequential.
They're
not gonna do
it's
that,
all consequence
right?
Cuz they get through they like go. It stands still, so they walk through the cars, and they get to the middle point between where the traffic goes one way or the other, and then they have an argument because, we're in the middle of a freeway. Let's argue about whatever we need to know.
It started
with the stakes of what's happening, and then all of a sudden the traffic goes from literally 0 to 100.
Yeah. Well,
that's the most appropriate moment for 0 to 100.
The stopping in the middle of the highway started with getting a text, and the kid saying, like, oh, man, I got a text. I have to stop everything
text
we're doing.
And drive, bro.
And, like, but, I mean, that is kind of...
That happened every time they got a text.
What was your name again?
Yeah. The cops are like...
It is like sort of, I think, indicative or I guess sort of allegorical of technology and society where we are so dependent on it. Like the moment a message comes in, we're like, oh, what's the message? I have to read it. Oh, I read it. Now I have to respond to it. Even if you're in life and death situations. So I think there's kind of a level of that that was interesting.
That's what I liked about it. It was exaggerated. Yeah. Like it both takes something that's real and then says, oh, you're going to do that? Fuck you. Like this is what's going to happen to you. And then somehow, some way, the three children make it across the freeway, and also the sex doll somehow comes back.
Yeah.
Or like there's a big car pileup because one of them drops a beer and they need to get that beer back.
Yeah.
Also, I don't remember like the status of being able to drink a beer to be that cool. Like I don't remember.
I wondered. Did anyone else? I don't.
What I wonder is if like
underage drinking, like I don't remember being
that. I think the sex doll would have been just as important to those parents as the drone was to that dude's dad.
Yeah, there really wasn't. Because was like, you think, I kept thinking.
$500 sex doll.
Yeah, this sex doll is going to come back. Somehow they're going to deus ex machina this sex doll back into the possession of these people. And they did, but didn't, because then it was destroyed and never returned. So, or his parents just rich and oblivious, and they're so concentrated on sex swings that they didn't notice the sex doll was gone? Yeah. Is that what we're led to believe?
There was no conversation there like, hey, do you...
Well, you're not going to report
were
that.
Were you in our house before, a room? Because I want to know about this.
Do you think they just have, like... 5 sex dolls, and I just can't remember that they lost that.
With the fact that they leave it out,
they're like, "Oh, that's fine." Like we have these other 4.
That's what was killing me about it is the fact that they have all these things. This kid knows where all these toys are. The sex doll is at, and yet he doesn't know what anything is.
Again, shout out to the production designer in this movie, going into whatever place they went to and be like, "Hey, we did some research, man. We need. I just need to see some options. Like, I need to see like 5 or 6 different sex dolls.
Those dolls are like $5,000."
100%. No, yeah, as somebody who has looked up the price point for sex dolls for like a commercial production,
sure.
You can go from like blow up balloon to like way too much really quickly for such a high value.
I'm sorry, a blow up balloon?
Yeah,
you know, like the $5 sex doll, where it's literally just like a, it's like a balloon with like a hole,
like an inflatable balloon.
Versus like frat party,
versus like very as close to reality as possible.
I think I was just confused by calling it a blow. It's like what do balloons do besides blow up? Like it was a weird qualifier. Like it was a weird description.
It could have been a water balloon sex doll
as opposed to a balloon that blows.
Fair assumption. Fair assumption.
A deflatable.
Deflatable balloon. They both. Yeah. You know what?
A balloon that gets smaller when you.
But that was my favorite scene. I think it represents like both the absurdist elements of that movie, as well as like to these kids, the stakes are so high. Like they need to see this text right now because it has such a high social status change for them. And it represents a lot of, at that age, one little like things as an adult that we look at and say, that doesn't matter. To them, it matters a whole bunch, and the movie buys into that.
Yeah.
The movie like makes sure you stay in that moment, and I think that's why you can still enjoy it.
Kiko, you have one?
It was the Terminator / Jurassic Park scene. Sorry. Yeah. I know you probably wanted it too.
Well, no, I mean, all three that you've said are the three
as
that
soon
I'm
as
like,
she
one
got
by
out.
One. I was like, okay, here's my next one. Okay, here's my next one. Fuck,
that was good.
So we both enjoyed it.
But
the
Terminator,
way.
Yeah.
As soon as she got out of that car, I was waiting for that Terminator run. I was like, this is going to be it. This is going to be it.
It was
the Jurassic Park mirror scene, of course.
Or the waif chasing Arya in Game of Thrones also.
Yeah. She went from normal 16-year-old child to like crazy parkour person from the beginning of Quantum of Solace.
I love some cinematographers like, we got to get a shot of the New Balance.
Yes, it was. It was just like to the sponsor right there. Like they were like, New Balance was like, put us in your movie. We don't care how. He's like, we
dude,
got
these
the perfect
laces
spot.
Are never gonna. Dissipate when you run at 40 miles around.
You want to be the Terminator?
But it was one of those epic ones. Like that movie's back in our time, whenever like Jurassic Park came out and everybody made fun of it. It was in Wayne's World and all the other ones.
Okay.
So it was Terminator.
Okay, so listen, we don't have any answers for this, but here's my question. There's a scene where they get this CPR doll. And they pretend to they practice kissing on it.
I saw this coming.
And Jacob Tremblay, he's like, why is there hair on her mouth? You know, because
it's sticky.
It's a sex. Ooh, it's sticky.
It,
yeah. You know, he's like, why is there hair? Do you think Seth Rogen like or the directors like tell him like what is going on there, or do you think they're just like just say this line? You know, because
I think the movie is self-aware. Even the way that they promote it, were like in the promotion for this movie. Oh, the only thing that I've seen before coming to this movie was like Seth Rogen sitting at a desk, the exec producer. Hey guys, you can't watch this movie. It's rated the trailer because it's rated R, and then it cuts to the right before they can say the F word, and then it shows the trailer. Like I genuinely think these kids know. There's no way that they don't.
Yeah, and it's important.
Like, they're 12 years old.
Jacob Tremblay actually
is. You tell them.
Now, does Jacob Tremblay specifically?
I was double checking because
probably not.
He's actually 12 years old. He'll be 13 in October. So when they filmed it, he was likely, you know, very like barely 12, if not a little younger.
They know.
I think the other kids probably were about the same age, even though their age. Data bursts are not on IMDb, but yeah. So, I mean, these are actual 12-year-olds playing 12-year-olds, not like, oh, is a 16-year-old playing
It's not like
down.
A Disney Channel show where it's a 30-year-old playing
a 15-year-old. Yeah, but I didn't know those. Did y'all?
He recognized
about those
a recon class, remember?
I mean, I definitely...
like, I didn't have I wouldn't have had an understanding.
My instinct is that they did explain it to an extent as like in a sit-down, safe place probably with their parents, like, hey, here's what you need to know about what's happening in this moment.
Those kids get the sex talk because of this movie? Did those their rich Hollywood parents have to give them the sex talk? That was in their contract.
If like, Millie Bobby Brown...
Would you rather get the sex talk from Seth Rogen or your mom?
I don't know. My mom was pretty epic.
I don't know. Based on Kiko's story, I want Kiko's mom to tell me.
I want Kiko's mom to give me the sex talk.
What was the cringiest moment for you? Like when we like I guess for you, Kiko. Like when was the moment you covered your eyes the most?
I know. Mine was the.
What
the
was yours?
Arm dislocated.
I have to
the
think
dislocated
through all
30. Arm. Oh. Like them trying to put that his arm back into the socket. I barely could watch.
One of the
that.
Kids on the bike. Gets on falls off his bike in such an extreme way because he's going really fast and it like gets thrown into a van and dislocates his arm. I thought he broke it at first.
Yeah. I thought it was like a broken elbow or like
yeah,
broken,
it was
like
a
the way it was
jelly. Like they made the prop of arm like longer and like gelatin like.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was gross. And then they pop it back in. Oh, yeah.
I think it didn't even matter that they were kids. It was just. There was something about the way they did that scene. I was like, nope, something's going to go wrong. I don't like this. I really don't. I don't like it at all.
Yeah, and they did a good job in that highway scene again, too, where it made us, like, cringe of, like, it made no logical sense of when I was going to, like, plow by a car to death.
Yeah.
Like, but it still felt like it really did feel like, oh, my God, this is life and death stakes. And you are, like, clutching your, you know, your seat.
Well, because no one wants
moments.
To see a 12-year-old crossing a highway.
I didn't think they were going to go that far. Like, that's why I was okay. Like, obviously, it was like, oh, man, this is going to be crazy.
Well,
but a part of me was inside of me said, there's no way they're going to go that far.
Well,
He's
you
not
didn't
gonna
know. You didn't know because they had shown you so much already. And you're like, it's something
That
something
seems
bad.
A little extreme.
You knew something bad was going to happen. I don't know if they're going to kill a kid, but something else is going to happen. And I was just not sure what.
Yeah, they weren't
going to
run just straight across the highway and be like, all right, cool, we made it, like, immediately in 10
seconds.
Yeah,
so I didn't know what that thing was going to be. And, I mean, you know, that's what I was worried about.
What about you, Kiko?
Pretty much the entirety. Like I said,
it was very...
Do you remember any of the movie? You just know the inside of your jacket
now. I just
know
the inside of my jacket.
You covered your face,
dude,
Spencer.
There was a moment... this is the reason I asked the question. There's a moment where the kid... There's a dare because he doesn't drink the beer. They call him Sippy Cup Kid. And so at the end, he gets a beer and he brings it to this end of this movie party and he drinks 4 sips. He breaks the record, which I felt weird after drinking like multiple beers before. And I was like, 4 sips? Are you kidding me? But I guess he's 12.
Yeah.
But then he gets picked to kiss the girl. I thought he was going to like try to kiss her and then like puke in her mouth or something like that. I was so like, oh my
Jesus.
God. Oh my God. Oh, this is going to be awesome. And it never happened, thank God. But that was the moment where I was like, it's over. It's a wrap.
Actually, I have to say, the awkwardness for me is him going up to the girl and kissing her.
Like, really?
No.
Just
that was a gratifying
kiss.
Moment.
The first kiss was awkward.
Mainly because for me, my own idiosyncrasy is the fear of rejection of a single person. So I can walk up to a crowd, no problem.
Hey, man.
But a singular person.
He asked for her consent. It was all chill.
No, I know that was great. But it was just like, I was like, no, what's going to happen with it? And she's looking at him and everybody's around them watching them kiss. That's my biggest fear. Like kissing in public for the first time and then getting like, the cheek would be like the thing that would scare the shit.
You know,
she's like,
I want to say, that this is a safe place, Kiko.
Exactly.
This is a safe place, but you need to take your insecurities and get the fuck out. Sorry, that was mean. That was really rude.
We're in that safe place. It's all right. I'm a teenager again.
I will say, another one of my favorite scenes was the final scene with the girls. the two teenagers.
The girls who were their adversary and became singing. Their homeboys.
In the house when they're on Molly.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And they show up and they are just, yeah.
Because there was the part of me that, like, I was the singer in 6th and 7th grade. I actually did, like, the talent show in 7th grade. And that was, so, like, older girls were always, like, I always showed off in front of him. So, like, that moment, I was just, like, rooting for him. I was like,
I think we need to see this, Matthias.
You do it. It didn't matter. Like, it wasn't going to happen.
Humble brag.
Nothing was going to happen between this 12-year-old and this 16-year-old girl. But it was just, like, a lot of fun. I was like, you show those girls who
I thought they
you
were
going to really
pity
are.
Them and kiss them. But then I was also like.
No, I was glad they didn't, though.
Okay.
Yeah. I can definitely remember that time. I was 19 the first time I did ecstasy back in my hometown. We had a party with, like at my brother's house. This bar built in his garage with like a bunch of neighborhood folks, you know, good mix of random people. And I'm doing ecstasy for the first time. A lot of people like my brother and the older folks had done it before who are a few years older. But like, I mean, I remember at one point, like, I mean, it was just ups and downs of rolling and just chaos and that kind of like goofy giggliness. And I do remember like even moments of like being caught off like with a guy I worked with. And like we were rolling so deep in like these weird hormonal emotions and I think we were like both trying not to make out with each other just because we felt like we had to make out with somebody. So I remember having this moment in this movie where I thought these girls were like about to start making out with these 12-year-old boys.
I didn't have that experience, but I got to the same conclusion. I thought it was going to go there.
Yeah, for me, I just felt like, oh my God, they're about to start like making out with these 12-year-old boys who just decided they didn't want to be at the kissing party down there to spin the bottle.
What a great role that would have been.
And that'd be crazy.
By the way, you have to kiss a 12-year-old boy.
By the way, you're
going to
make out with these high schoolers. I guess I was just like a wet blanket child, but I didn't. I guess my first time I was drinking. I didn't do exit, but I did. I drank at like 15, camping, and I had one Mike's Hard Lemonade, and I thought I was drunk. So I guess like that part of the
that's
like,
that which, kid that got his the weed blown happen, in his face, and he's like, "I'm
so."
I'm
I guess
high
at 15, I was really 12 years old.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't start drinking until I was 25. So, I have a question. What did you all think of the messages of this film?
The what?
The messages?
Yeah. Don't be a bully. Drugs are dangerous and you're going to...
Be yourself.
I did like the one character who was just like, the drugs are bad, okay, like monologues.
They all
throughout.
Believe that. Yeah. They were all like, drugs are like, will ruin your life.
They're
like,
really
don't
trying to make up for
it.
Lost time from Pineapple Express. They're Stop. Trying to make up for the sins they committed by making... every movie they've ever made.
It's interesting.
Drugs.
I was like, are we supposed to take these like lessons seriously? Even the bully one, like everyone made fun of like.
Well, at the end of the day,
bullying.
They still got the drugs. So that was kind of like, I was wondering how they were kind of.
Did anybody think
out of
the kids were going to do Molly? They were going to have like the kids on Molly.
I thought for sure they were going to do Molly.
I thought it was coming.
It would
have been a great, from a filmmaking perspective,
worried.
That would have been a great sequence.
No,
from like a
that
moral
been,
perspective,
that would have been,
that would have been awful.
Controversial.
Oh, yeah. But what great press. Hey, come see this movie. Our kids did real
I don't
Molly.
Know if a movie that you've made gets banned by North Korea, I don't think you can get any better.
That's what I'm saying. They're making up for the lost time.
Here's what would have been the
like,
great
you're
thing.
Already
they would have done a sequence. They did Molly and they thought they were tripping, but it turns out the guy sold them duds. And all it was chewable aspirins.
There you go.
So the whole time they're like, we're tripping. They're like, dude, I didn't sell him anything. I was lying to you.
What a missed opportunity for Flintstones vitamins to possibly make an appearance also.
And also the bit with them trying to have trouble with opening the childproof lid got old. And not only that, it's like they know all the other stuff about the drone.
It had a good payoff.
They know about
he
Google how to fix a broken arm or a possibly
dislocated arm. I like that was the character arc. He learned how to open a bottle of vitamins, so now he's a
he
real
got
boy.
Hard.
He's a real man now.
And he
yeah, but it was like you have Google. You could have Googled how to open a damn jar.
Well, they clearly Googling porn didn't go well for them, so maybe they were nervous.
You also don't have to Google it. It's on the bottle
cap. It's on
cap.
The label.
It says,
these children are illiterate. This is really a movie about
public
literacy.
But again, it was a heightened reality moment of like these are still kids who are struggling with like adult issues, and that was just like a glorified physical example of them.
Which one
position.
Of those three kids is going to be a big name in 10 years from now?
Who's the breakout star?
Not specifically from this movie, but like 10 years.
I mean,
down
Tremblay's
the road.
Already kind of a breakout.
But Tremblay,
I think Tremblay's going to fall off.
No, but like in like
Tremblay seems like he's on the same career path as like Asa Butterfield and
if
and
they
the
don't
kid
make
from Charlie and the Chocolate
or
Factory,
Finn Wolfhard from Stranger
Things. Right? Does art house movie breakout movie
Listen,
gets in bigger, like Hollywood blockbuster movie to try to promote him as the next thing. Somehow ends up in obscure TV show on, I guess, in 10 years, Disney Plus.
I think the kid who threw the party.
All I know is if they don't make a sequel to this movie in 6 years, I'm going to be very disappointed.
What, Gooder Boys? Is that what?
When they're in 12th grade?
Would it be Boys Don't Cry, or is that already
Or when they're going to college? Because the logical conclusion, sequel to this movie is when they're going to college. Now, not only are they still friends, but now they're separating in different, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like that and is. It becomes Richard Linklater's Everybody Wants Some. Nobody wants to see that
movie. Does this movie represent teenage experience better than Boyhood? That's the other question.
Definitely a different experience.
But no, for real, like which one of these kids 10 years from now is the big name?
I think they all actually will be. I think they're all really good kids.
Yeah, I don't.
Jacob Tremblay probably is the most.
Just because of his already like name experience or name like recognition.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think they each have potential, but none of them like stood out like immensely as like, oh my god, this
they like benefited from the role, but it wasn't like they milked it to a point of standing out.
Yeah, and much like Superbad, like of course Michael Cera is already known, but like Chris Rimmens-Plasse and Jonah Hill and Michael Cera all kind of had their own trajectories after that. I think these kids probably go
that's what I'm saying,
similar-ish
like,
route.
I think Keith L. Williams has a good future ahead of him.
Which one was that?
The black kid.
He was funny.
I think he knew what character he was playing. He was like he took that direction well.
They were
like
genuinely good actors. Like I thought that like Jacob Tremblay is a fine actor. He's fine. Like he did a good job. He fit the bill, but I feel like that kid actually has acting chops.
Yeah.
What did you say his name was?
Keith L. Williams.
Keith, he was good.
Keith
L. He was really good. Mm-hmm. He was a genuinely, I've heard being 12 years old or however old he is.
And
awesome.
Yeah.
I do want to give the shout out to his parents in it who are getting divorced. Little Rel, Howery, and Retta, two like decently well-known TV comedic actors who had, I think, really good cameos as well.
Keith's parents?
Yeah.
Like,
his actual parents were in the movie?
No. They have careers outside of this movie.
Yes.
So there's an... There's a character in the movie, Lucas. He's the black kid. Yes. He has two parents in the movie who are getting divorced.
Yeah. Okay.
They are two
fairly
well-known comedic actors in their own right.
I thought you meant the actual
one
parents
of this
kid.
Retta.
That's what I was saying. Like, I thought the
Retta is famous for Parks and Rec playing
guy's
Donna.
Uncle Drew.
Hey, you know
and
what?
Lil Rel.
Uncle Drew.
Stuff like Get Out, I think, was the thing I noticed.
Hey, Bo, you took that joke
Bird Box.
Just as far as the movie took their joke, and I think that's way too long. So good job on that one.
He wasn't Get Out. He's the T.S. motherfucking A.
I am T.S. motherfucking A. 100%. Okay. 100%.
He was also in the Kyrie Irving movie, right? Uncle Drew, the basketball movie.
Oh, yeah, that's right, Uncle Drew.
That. Yeah.
That's what is it weird that I recognize him more from that movie than Get Out? Where he plays a substantial role in an Academy Award winning film.
I'm on the same boat with you, even though I knew both, but the first one that came to mind was Uncle Drew.
It's the not basketball player and Uncle Drew.
Will Forte was really mean to his son.
I didn't recognize him. Maybe that's just my ignorance of not seeing a lot of Will Forte movies.
Well, I just don't think, like, it was funny, but it also was, like, really mean to tell your
what
kid
he
that
tell his
I
kid,
don't like
I don't love you anymore.
But no, he said, no, I don't like you. I love you. I'll always love you.
That was the best part.
You.
Yeah, like, is it... Isn't that what relationships are?
That's really mean.
But that's what relationships are.
Isn't that all father-son relationships are?
But you take that. That's traumatic for you when you're 12. Like, you're going to take that for the rest of your life.
I don't like you at this moment. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like,
I remember those exact words.
And look how you turned out.
Well, okay. First off, let me finish the sentence. I remember my father saying those exact words to my older brother. Not to me, when he was like caught like doing drugs at 16, like, you know, and he had a pretty troubled childhood. But my father, I remember saying the exact words after like physically abusing him was like, he's like, I still love you, but I don't like you right now. And you need to like get your shit together kind of thing. And it was like this like attempt at tough love that was incredibly wrong and incredibly problematic and was not the right way ultimately to handle it. But that is real. That's real life. I think that's what the movie did, was just sort of like tap into like the realness and, again, heightened reality and comedic in nature, but it was all wrapped.
No, I don't think that was real. I think that was exaggerated.
I was just given a book for every time they were mad at me. They're like, here's the book about why I'm mad.
No, I was with it. I thought that was as real as it ever gets. I mean, not even just dealing with kids' relationships. I think in relationships in general, you have love and like. Some days you love somebody, and then the other days you also may not like them, and depending on how you're mad, or I like you today, but I'm not really in love with you. It's how I feel like if you're in a really good, any kind of relationship, you love and like each other at the same point in time. But you can lose either one of them, but if you lose both of them, you're done. But that one was just like pointing. I loved it because they were really proving the point. He was like, you're grounded from this. I love you to death, but I do not like you at this point in time. But it was Will Forte, so I was just laughing in general because I can't really
take it. It was also very brief and in the montage, so it's like hard to like.
They really did cut this. Even like if it was 12-year-olds.
Even like and empathetic to real life, it was, goes by so quick. They're like, that somehow is funny.
Because I think it was cut like a 12-year-old kind of thing because it was cut really fast for a lot of things. And it was moving really fast where I was like, I feel like I should be younger watching this because it's just cut really fast.
Also, those kids were really good drone operators. Like,
I
feel like
nowhere, yeah.
Like drone operating literacy in 12-year-olds is crazy. Like technology,
like the cell phone. I did that for the first time on my cell phone, like DJI or whatever it was. DJI, I mean, the app, and it's not that complicated. And I, you know, you do hit things with it, which they did.
But it's commonplace now for these kids.
Yeah, but they do have a natural aptitude for technology.
So. I crashed many drones.
I think that was very realistic.
I like that.
Another cameo we didn't mention, but I didn't want to go unsung, was Sam Richardson, who played the cop in the convenience store.
Yes.
I know him mostly from Veep, and he's
shout out to the late night cops.
Traders and everything else. But yeah, he's, I think it was funny of like, because that was in Superbad, they run into the cops. Was it played by Will Forte and Seth Rogen?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And so like, you think like,
no, it's Bill Hader. It's Bill Hader, not Will Forte.
Yeah, Bill Hader. Yes. It's Bill Hader. Yeah, Bill
Hader. Who's homies with McLovin.
And Seth Rogen. That's right. So like, you think like, oh man, here's the cop. Like, they're going to have the Superbad type storyline where this cop's now involved with helping these kids. And it was funny because they subverted that by just being the cop who just, no matter what they did, was like, no, I'm not engaging you in any fucking way. I just got off a shift. And that was, I think it was just a fun cameo, like moment.
Well, the same way you treat any 12-year-olds who's like, we played hooky. He's like, okay, no one cares. Just like,
yeah, we get it. It's like, we have drugs. No, you don't.
But
like,
what?
You're trying to shoplift one of your, put the beer back. Just stop. Just put it back. Fucking stop.
The
like, the fact
gas.
That you're
he's
so
tired.
Nervous.
Let's go home.
Yeah, I mean, he you know, and it was one of those moments where you knew, like, the adults in the room were saying, like, these are timid, scared kids who know they did something wrong, and they're going to punish themselves psychologically more than anything I need to do, so I'm just going to give them a little scare and push them in that direction. I thought that was another, like, kind of real, authentic kind of thing that I don't know if y'all have had.
I like the throwaway at the end of that scene where he, like, calls his partner and he's like, I don't want to have kids now. And it's his like detective of the police force. He's like, I don't care if the detective and I'm the. It's like this weird. It is so quick. That was one of the funniest parts of the movie.
Yeah.
I wanted to see his story.
Yeah. Maybe we'll get that
your boss is your wife.
I just like that.
Maybe we'll get the spinoff with him and his cop friends called Blue.
Maybe the
Boys.
Brooklyn 99 Good Boys spinoff, connective tissue.
Oh, please. Yeah. I would be down.
It would be interesting. Like, yeah, if Sam Richardson as Officer Sachs from this movie shows up in Brooklyn 99 in a cameo. Like, he gets like sent from LA to New York for some like undercover thing, Beverly Hills Cop style. And
that'd be good.
I think it was just. Yeah, it was just really good references. The scene basically like it was a middle school version of Superbad. That scene of the alcohol was the same scene that they had going into the store where they were trying to buy alcohol and he was having that montage of like, I had no choice, you know, fighting the security guard. The guy running away from the chick who was the Terminator scene was that McLovin and them running away from the cops.
Yeah.
You know, it was all those moments of like, and then him having that talk with him, like, we could make out if we go there. It was that moment of like, they're going to be drunk and they're going to be wanting to suck somebody's dick. We could be those guys.
Here's the thing.
I think that's maybe why this movie was a little bit too long is because not only was the joke, like, we get the bit, but also we've seen this movie before.
Yeah.
Maybe not with 12-year-olds, but
maybe it's the preamble that you get your kids to watch before Superbad. Like, oh, look, it's now the older version. Maybe,
that's what I'm saying. Is it's like, is this movie ever going to really come out of the shadow of that? Like, it did really well at the box office in the first weekend, like 21 million the first weekend.
Really good.
And it was number one. But is it really going to come out of the shadow? Like, Superbad was like, we're referencing it now, multiple years after it's come out. It's not going to be that kind of movie, is it? There's no way.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it definitely... sorry, got distracted. Bathrooms through the hallway in the very front there. yeah, so... Sorry, I'm easily distracted, especially when I'm drinking. So...
That was an acceptable answer, though. Like, I...
yeah, like, I've been drinking. She's looking for the bathroom. I wanted to help her.
Is it going to be good?
So,
no.
So, yeah, I think we'll wrap it up. I think what I like more than anything else, and we're seeing this more and more in modern TV and film, but a lot more in TV, I think, with uniquely created shows that... are very genre melding. Like, we saw moments in this that it was clearly a comedy, but much like we see on shows like Barry or Atlanta or Fargo, or like these shows that sort of like blend comedy, drama, action, horror, like all of these elements into one thing. And I think we're going to see this more and more because I think that's the best representation of real life. And we talked a lot about how this movie does have a lot of realness to it. So I just kind of want to like sum up what, you know, y'all's thoughts were, as well as mine, on the fact that it was just, they took all of these different elements of different genres to say, like, hey, life isn't one thing. Life's not just a comedy. Life's not just a drama. Life's not just a horror. We do go through all of these moments, especially in our formative years of, like, horror and comedy and thriller and everything else. So I just think that's an interesting tonal shift we're seeing in TV and film now, so...
Yeah, I think movies are respecting their viewers more. I think we went through a weird phase of a lot of movies just kind of being passable. Like, I watched a video essay where about this, where it just talks about how movies just kind of beget the movies that came before and do the same messages that all of those don't. And this movie kind of falls under that category too, but also treats its audience with a little bit more respect in that regard. Like, even though it's a goofy movie about these 12, like, it's exactly what you just brought up, is that it really takes in all the best elements of those things and it feels like a compilation movie of the best elements of those movies. And that's what I was trying to, I guess, say about like that versus Superbad. I think in the long term, it probably won't be that big and important of a movie, but maybe it shows remnants of a trend that we're about to see with these comedy movies.
Yeah.
where it's headed. It was fine. Well, it was goofy.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
I did respect the realism of where they did stuff, like would go in and out of the realism of things that would happen and the awkwardness of how it is to be a teenager, and play with that a whole lot. Like you're saying, move it into movies now to where it's, you know, a lot more writing the characters and who they are and placing it into how we can see ourselves rather than just being a whole make-believe world of things. I just kind of liked it in general. I don't think I'll probably watch it again, maybe in... couple of years, who knows? But it was.
Will you show your kids this movie, Kiko?
I'll show them the show Big Mouth before this one, because I think that one's poignant. I love that show Big Mouth. It is great for teenagers.
I'm gonna show my kids the raunchier show than this. I'm gonna show them.
Yeah.
Because
I feel like so you're gonna do the Good Boys eighth grade a double feature nights.
Hey, now we don't have to give them a book. We just show them the movies now.
I know, yeah. Exactly.
And we just walk out the room and drink in the kitchen. You don't have to do anything.
So any lasting thoughts wrapping things up about the film? I mean, you'd recommend it as a good, fun, one-time watch. You know, don't see it before you see the really good things in theaters, but you also wouldn't, like, deter people.
In a vacuum, it would not be my first choice. But as a good... movie to see with people and have a fun time, I thought it was good. I thought I don't know in the long term if it really is going to mean anything to anybody, but I think it's a complimentary piece to what's the comedy trend is going and where it's for that specific age group. Maybe like we're treating 12-year-olds with a lot more respect.
Well,
and like in the media now, knowing the media that they consume and being like, oh, like, we're not going to treat you like weird alien. Like, we're not writing dialogue for children's movies as if they're, like, adults. We're writing them as kids would talk. I felt that a little bit more sincerity with that. So maybe I would show that to, like, my 12-year-old. I don't know.
Depends.
I don't know.
it's a good palate cleanser after Hobbs and Shaw.
I don't know. I felt like this was very much like Hobbs and Shaw for me in the sense that, like, it was... I mostly laughed and enjoyed the film in terms of, like, throughout the entire film, I was definitely, like, enjoying it, and I was laughing, but it was all because of, like, oh, they're actually going there. Oh, they actually did that. Oh, and it was all about this, like, I can't believe they're doing this. And it was the same thing with Hobbs and Shaw. And for me, it was, like, both of these movies are They're kind of forgettable.
Yeah, I won't remember this movie in 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, I'm not going to remember it.
2 weeks?
This movie's gone.
Listen, like, my attention deficit disorder.
We're seeing the movie next week, so yeah.
Yeah, I got more important.
We haven't gotten to what we're seeing next week.
Oh, sorry.
Yet.
I know
slow,
we haven't.
Slow your roll, Kiko. We're about to get to that moment.
We're just going
to
see this movie again.
But that's my
joke's on you. We're going to see it twice because you don't remember.
I don't know that I agree that this movie was as sincere as y'all are saying it is. But hey, you know, maybe it just wasn't for me. You know?
Also love Fast and Furious.
I had fun,
so
but it was also like
you were bummed The Rock wasn't.
It was really stupid.
Now, okay,
you were bummed The Rock wasn't Will Forte.
So we chose this one. So our other options that we could have seen over at Mueller were the only other options we thought about seeing and we discussed was Dora the Explorer live action movie and The Nightingale.
I wanted
at like
to see
a screening time of like 10 p.m., meaning we'd start recording this like after midnight or whatever. So, I mean, it was just sort of a, you know, as far as how the movies are laid out in the locations we want to see them, this was definitely the best option of something that made sense to see. That being the case in the theaters overall, is that what you know, like this was a good choice. Like this was a good movie. If you were hanging out with your friends, having drinks as we were doing.
Four guys.
This would be a thing where you like.
It would have been kind of weird if four guys went to Dora the Explorer and said, I know about female empowerment. Let me tell you about female empowerment. Like that's not the movie we could talk about.
Yeah. So what's in theaters right now that hasn't already been seen? I mean, obviously go see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood first.
I haven't seen it yet.
Jesus Christ.
I'm sorry.
And
you lie. Just lie on the podcast.
Once upon a time in Beau's disappointment.
Next on my list.
Not seen the new Tarantino
movie. I
want to
see it. You know what? I got weirdly snobby and wanted to see it on a film print and then didn't realize at all why I wanted specifically to see it on a film print.
Yeah, I think we kind of did lasting thoughts and that's nice. And I think next week, they haven't announced for Mueller or Village yet, but at several other Alamo Draft Houses, like South Marbrits and other ones, they are showing Ready or Not. I feel like that should be the next one.
They played a trailer for that before the movie.
Yeah.
Which one was that one again?
I had not even heard of this movie. Had you heard of
the one where she gets married and the family she's marrying into?
Yeah, that one was so like she's getting killed.
They play a game where they're going to like
Victorian era.
Yeah, I'm down for that.
Okay.
I think Ready or Not kind of feels like the next one.
Is it a period piece or are they just in period piece clothing?
It's not a period piece. They did a wedding. It was at the wedding. They were dressed up for a wedding.
They're just being pompous with the way they're dressed.
That's why she's in a bride.
You think wedding dresses only exist modern day? Like, you don't think wedding dresses exist?
Did those look period?
They were overalls. Yeah,
they did not look period to me.
I actually
would
agree with that.
Modern
suits. I was just saying on the drive here.
The house was antique. Everything in the house was antique, but it was like an old house that they had a wedding at.
I was saying on the drive here, that movie looked, from the trailer, seeing the trailer on like the internet versus seeing that in theaters, that looked fun.
Well, clearly,
I want to see that movie.
Clearly, they've been doing this for a while too. This if it feels like a period piece, the sacrifice thing. It's Get Out meets You're Next.
Yeah,
I like both those movies.
And it's from a directing team that did stuff like VHS is kind of like the really big one. I think people would know. I've never seen any of this stuff like Southbound, Devil's Blue, whatever else. But it looks like also one of the co-writers is Ryan Murphy, which is kind of interesting. This might be a different Ryan Murphy. We'll just cut this out because it's a different Ryan Murphy. He wrote a bunch of horror films.
It's Ryan Murphy's twin brother, Ryan Murphy.
Wrong Turn and Skinwalkers. Now that's going to be a fun game. Was it Matias or Beau who went, So yeah, the bride's wedding night. That's right, because they had a cell phone. They were Googling, but it looks like Victorian era.
It looks fun though. I would see that.
But yeah, that looks like the type one. Maybe we'll do that one next week or something else. But we'll see.
I hope that pairs well with Knives Out.
Where'd You Go, Bernadette is also getting more than AFS Cinema screening release, so that's another option. New Richard Linklater movie.
I feel like that's definitely one where you can watch. You know, drink a bunch of red wine or white wine? I don't know. Would you drink red wine or white wine?
What would you?
I think maybe Chardonnay or Pinot Grigio.
What would you pair?
Let's bring that to this movie we just saw. If you were watching this movie, what would you drink?
Oh, yeah.
Not what you did drink, but in hindsight, what would you drink to get through this movie?
What pairs well with this movie, Bo?
Well, for me personally, when I think of myself at 12 years old, I think of straight tequila. So I've been drinking tequila. And you know what? Fuck you. My childhood was a little bit more difficult than yours.
Yeah.
Me and my mom would split a fucking bottle of tequila when I was in my formative years. That's who we are.
All right.
So,
explain why you're so hairy. Yeah.
Harrison?
It's just your face. I'm jealous, okay?
Yeah, it's like the beard. Got it. Cool. Kiko?
Well, I they were drinking beers, I would drink a shitty beer, which is Miller Lite.
Yeah. Well, you are drinking a cider, so.
I am now, but for the movie.
Look, our future sponsor, Austin East Ciders, though, is the best cider if you're going to drink cider at all.
Spencer?
I would, outside of the sponsor, actually agree with that statement about Austin East Cider. It is a very good East Cider.
Yes.
I would agree with the beer sentiment. I don't know if I could drink a Miller. I would need to have like four of them. Like every like plot point shift, I would drink it like a shotgun of beer really quickly to like ride it out to the next big plot point and then down another one.
The divorce.
A drinkable beer, less than 5% ABV.
Specific. I'm sure there's a, I think the Draft House is the perfect place to watch this because an alcoholic shake is the only way to,
that's pretty good.
Or a milk stout because
I
milk
to have their alcoholic
makes sense.
But
I've really
heard nothing
but excellent. The Guinness? Oh, it's good.
What's your favorite one? Mm-hmm. What's your favorite one?
The Guinness one?
The Guinness one? That sounds good.
Yeah. So this is interesting. I do want to say real quick for those who don't know the Alamo Draft House, who might be listening to this at some point in life, who knows? The adult milkshakes kind of started with the $5 milkshake was kind of something that was, their menu was inspired by Pulp Fiction and other popular films. So they have a Royale with cheese, you know, stuff like that. But the milkshakes, they have what, three or four different alcohol-based milkshakes?
Now they have a lot more. Yeah.
Yeah.
They probably have like six or seven.
Are they the same at each and every theater?
Yeah.
As our resident Alamo Draft House expert,
oh, me and Kiko both work there.
Yeah.
We both worked there. Yeah.
No, I was just trying to call back to the Fast and Furious.
Yeah,
where you're a resident Fast and Furious guy.
Yes. So. Okay. You're right. Sorry.
You can make.
That's all right. That joke
as
is
a resident AMC guy.
If you didn't know, you can make any shake alcoholic at the Alamo Draft House.
Can you really?
You could, instead of like a Guinness.
Can you tell them what to put in the shake?
Yeah, instead of like a Guinness shake, you can tell them to put any
stuff. Give
stout.
Me a vanilla shake, but put a beer in it.
You technically could.
Do it.
What would the server do?
That's what the Guinness shake is. That's
but
all
not
it is.
Guinness. I want like Miller Lite.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You could do any sort of like.
If you
stout
wanted diarrhea
whatever.
To that extent, you could do it.
I mean, we'd all judge you. But ahead.
I want to do it just to see somebody be like behind the bar, like, what the fuck?
Hey guys, I'm Matias Allegro on the internet, and that's how you call me.
So yeah, we're gonna wrap it up here. You know. I don't know if you need to find us. We'll put links in the show notes or whatever the fuck it is people say on podcasts.
We will be on MySpace Music.
I think by this point, we will have at Critics on Tap on every social media site up and running by then. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and potentially if people talk me into other things like younger people use like Snapchat, which I still don't understand. But it exists apparently for people younger than those of us up here today. At Critics on Tap, we will start doing future episodes. We really want as many people as possible to start coming to these things and enjoying it with us and being a part of the experience. So that's something we're going to be talking about more in the weeks moving forward as we edit these things and get them out there. And anything else?
And always remember, review responsibly.